Listen to this.
Zakawani, the flying winger.
Here's Brad Evans.
It's Steve.
Who is it? It's Brad Evans.
It's not again.
Happy days are here again. Turning with a drive, it's Steve Zakawani.
Evans with the left one.
He's an attacking threat, Brad Evans.
This is so weird.
The party has started.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Sounders FC podcast. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by, this is when we say club legend, this is actually two legends. We have Chris Cornish and Dr. Mike Morris. And these two have been here since day one, the beginning. And it's like still here. I think Sounders fans will be familiar, of course, with both of them. But we've never actually had them on the podcast. We wanted to get them on this week just to discuss the Sounders history from your perspective. You guys have seen a lot. A lot behind the scenes as well. And I'm going to start with you, Chris, because I met you, it was at a combine, if you remember, 2009, the Sounders first year. And I might have been in Fort Lauderdale, wherever it was. And then you're still here 15 seasons later. Like, you've seen it all change from Starfire, now we're at Long Acres. I want to kind of hear from you just the highlights. Like, how much have you seen the league change and like sort of your department change? I just asked you right now how big your department is. It's like 8-9 people. It was not like that when I was playing. So just how much have you seen it change over the years?
Yeah, when I started, it was Randy and myself working with you guys and Dr. Morris, obviously.
Yeah.
And we've grown over the years, but now just going through the numbers, we have 9 total on the medical staff.
Wow.
Obviously split through first team and development. But we have a lot on our staff now to take care of you guys.
Insane.
The facility as well. I can't believe you haven't seen it.
I have not seen it, yeah. Stuff, yeah. So tell us what's in there. What the players have access to.
I mean, the training room, we have a big training room space with all the tables for all the therapists to work with, all the players. Right off of that, we have 2 big hot tubs, cold tubs built in. We have an oxygenated tub as well. We have a sauna with the Himalayan salts in there. It's very important. We have a cryotherapy chamber right next to that. Then the other side of the treatment room, we have a recovery room. So we have 2 oxygen chambers there, some recovery chairs where the guys can relax after hard training.
Hold on. What's oxygenated water? Is that just a hot tub?
No, it's a hot tub.
Yeah. Mike, I knew he was going to say that. My next question was going to be, Mike, how much of this are you listening to and how much is going in one ear out the other?
It's excellent. You get to sit in there for 45 minutes. So it takes out the water on one end and it puts it in this machine that kind of adds additional oxygen to it and pumps it back in. And to actually tell you the boring story of how this came about, it's on like golf courses, ponds where they want to grow moss.
Mm.
They would use a version of this, increase the oxygenation of the water, and they would find that the moss would grow more intensely.
Wow.
So
how does that relate to the human body? Mitochondria or something?
Sure.
cellular level stuff?
I'm going to send you the studies after this so you can dive in. Brad, you would love it.
I'm sure I would use it.
Yeah. 45 minutes in a hot tub, you would do great.
That's like my dream.
Yeah.
So my first question is, what does the Sounders team need to do to win, in your opinion? No, I'm just kidding.
We need a left winger who was signed really out fast of England previously with Arsenal.
We need Jack Zakawani and Evans back.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
I would love to.
Can you remember when you first found out that you were going to be the team doctor? Mm. And what that? How did that even come about?
Well, we were the doctors for the Sounders when they were in the last 3 years of, I believe it was USL.
USL, yeah.
And so when they went up to MLS, Virginia Mason, where I worked, was still the sponsor. And mm-hmm. so we kind of moved up with them.
Yeah. And you're...
We knew that.
Can we talk about where you went to school for a second?
Yeah. And like,
I don't know.
I want to know the history. Yeah.
I know
a part of the history.
Yeah.
But I'm always fascinated with doctors.
When did you go to school?
Yeah.
I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo for college.
Oh.
And I went to University of California, Irvine for medical school.
Okay, now I understand. Yeah.
That's right. Yes. And then I did my orthopedic residency at University of Washington, and then I did a sports medicine fellowship with the Curlin Job Clinic in Los Angeles, which at the time was taking care of the indoor soccer league team. I think it was like the Lasers or something. Okay. But they took care of the Rams and the Dodgers and the wow. Angels and the Lakers and all those teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew that. What about you, Corey? So did you move here, was it for the MLS or had you been here? Because you came for school first. You forget, you were a player. Let's talk a little bit about that.
That's why I came on the
podcast. You're English. We're English.
Yeah.
But why did you move here in the first place? And how did you even end up with the Sounders? I don't think I know that part of it.
So I went to school in England, did sports therapy.
Hertfordshire.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, I know that.
I went to school there, did my undergrad in sports therapy, and I worked with Watford for a little bit, and then I was working with Fulham's first team. And I decided I wanted to keep playing, but I also wanted to do some more education. So I got a scholarship to go to Montana State University, Billings. So I got a full ride there playing soccer and then to do athletic training. Yeah. So I did my master's there. While I was there, I interned with DC. And then at the end, I went and worked for FC Dallas for a year. And so at the end of my Dallas internship, my work visa was running out. I was like, all right, where can I end up? And I knew the Sounders were becoming a franchise. And so there was no application, anything. I figured out who works for the team. And Schmetz actually brought me the letter a few years ago. He was like, he found a letter that I had written him, but it was like Adrian, Chris Henderson, Randy, and Schmetz. But I came in for an interview with Mike and Randy in kind of November-ish of 2008.
Yeah.
And then got the position and moved up here and been here ever since.
Wow.
What is the, I think fans will be curious, the dynamic between like a coaching staff and then the training staff, right? Like how do you fight for the players while you might have a hard-nosed coach, old school, like Schmetz, you know, it's probably getting better. We don't really know. You can probably touch on that. But how you find that balance of like fighting for the players, but also if the coach has something that he wants, like that whole dynamic. And I'm sure Ziggy was a similar, he's got a knock on his foot, make him play through it sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the advantage we have is I've worked with Schmetz now this 16th season working with Schmetz. So he knows myself, he knows Mike really well. So he'll respect a lot of what we say. I think he also knows with us as well, it's not a case of someone has something, oh my gosh, they can't play, they can't train. If we think it's okay to push through it, we'll encourage them to push through it. And so when we kind of say, no, this is something we really need to be cautious of, I think the coaches, for the most part, respect that.
Yeah,
So we have a great relationship with them.
Yeah.
I would say that's one of the more impressive things about Schmetz for me has been that he listens to the staff, listens to the training group, listens to the recovery group, listens to the doctors, and he doesn't confront you or sort of argue about things to any significant degree. But, but generally he accepts that and figures that's their role and he's been very, very good.
Now, did you have a soccer background before Virginia Mason hooked up with the Sounders or before your kids were playing? Or did you get into the game through those two things?
I really got into the game with my kids.
Yeah, that's what I was going to assume.
I didn't know. He didn't know what offsides was.
What was Jordan always the best player?
He
was, easily.
I was his coach.
Yeah. I was going to ask that. You coached him.
It was all the developmental.
You coached him,
He's his starting coach. Actually, his first coach ever was Peter Fewing.
Okay. Really?
Coach Pete. Jordan when we took Christopher, his older brother, to Peter Fewing's camp on Vashon Island, which that was his original camp.
Wow.
And Jordan came along and he was just crying. He wanted to play. And he was too young.
Yeah.
And I remember Pete looking at him going, oh, he's got big calves. He's going to be a soccer player. He can play. Pete, I always tell Pete, he was Jordan's first coach.
That is so good.
When you reflect on Jordan's career, and I can't imagine being a dad and then being on the sidelines, being in a stadium full of 40,000, 30,000, whatever it is, and getting to sit there and watch from the sidelines.
While you're at work, you're still working.
Describe that feeling because I don't think, I can't imagine that there's another role. Like, I mean, Josh Wolf, I guess, has his son playing and, you know, actually playing for him. But that relationship has got to get weird after a while. But you're just kind of on the periphery watching in the best seat in the house. Like, how does it get any better?
That's, you're right, Brad. That's been a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a gift. And, How often does that happen? Never. You know, Michael Bradley and Bob Bradley.
Yeah, it was a few.
But yeah, it's, you know, how many dads still get to be a sideline soccer dad when their kid is 24 years old and you can still yell at him, you know? Jump back, jump back!
It's a little different than Bob and Michael. I remember a story. I wasn't there for this game, but Michael was a captain, and I think it was either a World Cup game or something, a big game. And Michael got into it with the referee, and I heard the story, but I guess Michael and Bob got into it in the tunnel on the way back into the locker room. And I heard Bob just grabbed him by the neck and shoved him up against the wall and was like, "You can't do that." It's like this infamous story. I don't think you ever had any of those.
I haven't done that.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's been a while since I've given advice. You know, the drive home from the game advice, you know, that
didn't go. I was curious.
That didn't go too well.
Okay. I was curious about
several years
ago. Quick.
Cornish, how has your, specifically your role sort of changed and evolved over the years? Because I feel like, you know, when you came in, you know, Randy was, I don't know what the exact title was, head trainer, I guess, sort of like that. Yeah, then a couple of years later, you took over that. But you've really grown the department. You kind of, you know how it works and stuff. Just how's your role changed and how has that, even that world changed? There's so much data and stuff that we didn't have back then that you guys have. Just sort of talk us through just kind of how your position has grown over the years.
Yeah, when I came in, I was the assistant athletic trainer to Randy.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah.
To know him well.
Yeah.
And then it was around 2015, I became the head athletic trainer. Randy moved on. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of, we got an additional athletic trainer. So there was three of us in the first team. And then 2017, I became the director and we started adding more staff. We added a physical therapist. And then in 2021, I became a VP of sports medicine.
Okay.
So now overseeing all of the medical staff throughout the franchise, so the development side, so Tacoma Defiance and the academy.
Wow.
And then with all the data and everything, I work really closely with our director of performance, Adam.
Yeah.
And so a lot of testing, tracking, everything that everyone is doing every single day on and off the field. So working really closely with him on that. But thankfully, he has a department to help us with all that as well. But yeah, it's gone a long way since Randy, myself, and Dave Tenney.
That's all it was. Yeah,
that was all it was.
You know, Omega Wave and all of that. Yeah.
Oh, Omega Dave.
Yeah, Omega Dave. I'm always curious, but I want to talk about oddities. Mm-hmm. So weird injuries that you thought you'd never see, or you know, some fluky thing that's happened in the club. I mean, we've had blood clots, we've had heart stuff, we've had weird OB, knocks that turn right. We have traumatic injuries also, and how you kind of respond to those. But do you think back on, you know, four or five where you're just like, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, there's definitely some weird ones that we've come across. There's been some catastrophic ones, obviously, with yours, Steve, that we often reflect on and how we get through them. I think in the moment it happens. You work with it, you manage it. But we've also had some strange ones. As soon as you started talking, I was thinking of Mike Vecita.
Yeah.
And he had an injury. Do you remember this? Where he scored and he did the knee slide, but it was on turf.
Oh,
and so he's sliding on the turf and suddenly his knee just like digs in the ground. And he had this weird thing. What was it called?
Seroma.
A seroma, where his skin and like the fascia of the muscle kind of shifted. And he created this swelling in between those.
I remember.
And you had to drain it eventually, I think.
I tried everything. We finally did an operation where we cleaned it out, stitched tissue, and it was back together.
All from his celebration.
Yeah, all from a celebration.
And I think it was the goal.
I think it was the throw-in against Kansas City. Yeah. That's
that
right.
One?
I think it was that one.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
But he was, I remember it. He got it drained. It was huge. It would just bubble up every single day.
Yeah.
And so you just went in with stitches or staples or?
No, stitches. Kind of placated back down. We had a plastic surgeon do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's been a lot of strange ones.
That's crazy. Any weird one? I mean, yours are kind of.
We just look at each other and laugh. And the new doctors come in and I said, you're going to see some stuff here that you will go, what the heck? It's not even. And we see things, you know, that. We'll look it up in the literature. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Just an injury. We had one where a guy clotted off his femoral artery.
Mm.
Just that, you know, this is almost unheard of.
How is that possible?
Wow.
In a tackle?
No. We don't know why.
Whoa. That's wild.
Yeah.
I think when you did my surgery, you left something in my knee. You want it back because it still hurts to this day.
No. I put a little pace in there.
I put some pace in there.
Yeah. Didn't you notice that after the surgery?
So you took Jordan's PRP juice in my knee. I get a lot of questions about PRP because it's kind of a new thing. They're doing it for like hair injections now. I feel like I was the first one to get it for some reason, because I felt like I was in an Eastern European hospital, even though it was at Virginia Mason. The doors were open. I'm cursing, sweating through the table. The worst pain I've ever had. It was every 2 weeks, three times. And I think it was probably your first time doing it. And I was just the guinea pig.
Yeah.
And it was the most miserable thing. Can you describe what it is? Because people ask all the time. Yeah. All I know is it's platelet-rich plasma, and like they take your own blood. That's all I know. Yeah.
So platelets, not only do they lead to clotting, so if you cut yourself, the platelets go there, and they form a clot to stop the bleeding, right? But they also release growth factors, and the growth factors are what heal the wound. So the theory behind it is that if you take platelets and you put them in somewhere, they're going to release these growth factors and help it heal and help it recover, right? And so the process is you take blood and you spin it down and you collect the platelet layer, and then you inject those platelets into whatever site that you want. It's still controversial, I would say. There are some studies that seem to show it works for some things. Others show it doesn't work. But there's a place for it at least to try it. Yeah, it has some success.
Leads me to my next question: stem cells, and your opinions on stem cells, and kind of where that's going in sports specifically, because it's not allowed, or it is allowed, or you just don't tell anyone and you fly to Germany or Mexico or something and get it done.
But you can do stem cells here in the United States.
But it's different than other countries, right?
You can't manipulate it. So what they do is they take fat or they take bone marrow and they spin it again and they collect the layer that have the stem cells in it. But that in the FDA won't allow you to manipulate that. And so you can inject that, but there's way less than 1% stem cells in that, in that what you collected. In Europe, they will grow the stem cells. And so they can collect them and then multiply them and then inject them.
So you get a higher concentration, more
higher
healing.
Concentration, yeah. Again, no good studies show that stem cells work. A lot of anecdotal evidence, but no good double-blind study that evidences that stem cells are effective.
I wonder how you watch games. Like, when you're there on the bench, are you able to like kind of just watch the game? Obviously, you work with the guys, you want to see the team do well. Or is your mind constantly just making sure everyone's okay? Like, someone goes down, head goes on the ground a little bit. Like, are you able to watch the game and then something happens? You're like, oh, let me kick into trainer mode? Or are you always in like trainer mode?
I am very passionate.
I've seen you.
I actually, Schmetz will enjoy this. I really like winning. I hate losing. I hate it. I'll watch the game and I'll be very into it, like only encouraging, obviously. But when something happens, I just kind of switch into it and I'll do what I need to do. I'm also one of those people, like, I don't enjoy watching injury videos. With your injury, I think I've watched it once. Like, I don't do that. But a lot of trainers are like, oh, let me see. I'm not into that, but I can do it in the moment. I have no issue with that. So during a game, I pretty much enjoy the game and watch the game.
Okay.
But I'm constantly scanning. If there's ever a break, I'm just checking all 11 players. Good.
Okay.
Watch challenges. Anyone being hit in the head. So, with the new rule change coming out this weekend.
So I was just going to ask you about
I'm going to be going on a lot less, I assume. I get to enjoy the game and get to sit with Mike and see Mike gets into it.
He does. I love that.
So can we read this new rule? Because that was going to be my next question. So if the referee stops play due to a potential player injury and the medical staff enters the field, Chris or Mike, I guess, the player may be required to leave the field of play for 2 minutes. So what's the interpretation of that rule to you? And have you discussed it with the coaching staff? And what are the plans of action that you're going to take?
So we've made, so the coaches have made sure that all the players understand this now, because they trialed it last year and we had a situation where a player went down from the first team, had no idea of this rule, had treatment, and then suddenly realized, hold on, I have to sit on the side for 2 minutes? Why is that? So we've made sure everyone knows this rule. To me, the referees have been great. I've never really had an issue with a ref giving me time, or sometimes they get angry at me if they wave me on and I kind of sense the player's going to be fine. Yeah. It's a corner. I'll just kind of take my time. They get a little angry. I don't go on. They get to stay on.
Yeah.
So with this rule, I'm hopeful that player goes down, the ref will go over to them and say, do you need the trainer or you just need a moment? And they'll be able to say, I need a moment. So I think there'll be a few times players will just stay down a little bit longer and we won't need to go on and bring them off. But I'm a little nervous sometimes. Like, you can get hurt and it not be a foul. Sometimes you do need assistance, but you're going to be okay. So you can also hobble off to the side. If you take yourself off to the side, then you don't have to be in this 2 minutes. So that's the other way you could go around it.
So these new rules, just a little bit gray. But the hope is that you negate rolling around, wasting time. Yeah. Right? Yes. Along with that is the rule of
off the field.
Substitutions, right? Getting off the field in 10 seconds. Yeah. Otherwise, then the player being subbed on has to sit for a minute, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think about that. You got five subs. Yeah. I mean, that could be 5 minutes right there if the player doesn't run off. And then you got 2 minutes for three or four injuries. You're playing down a man for, you know, 15% of the game?
Yeah.
Like, it kind of puts onus on the players, I guess, to kind of speed up. It's a shot clock of sorts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think it'll be good. I think it will. Like, whenever we have a new rule in soccer, people get nervous about it. But I think it'll be good because people aren't going to be laying on the ground if they don't need to.
Yeah.
The sub, I mean, how many times have we been at the end and someone's just slowly walking off the field?
Losing
it's
your mind.
So frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the refs as well, I think pro is pretty experienced. They're going to have some nuances to it. I think it'll work well.
They have discretion. Right.
So
you take a really blatant yellow card foul and you're down and the trainer has to come out, I don't think they're going to
make you go off for 2 minutes.
Oh, yellow card. If the other team gets a yellow, the player does not have to come
up. Or even it's a hard foul. I think they have some discretion in that. You know, if they think you're
actually
messing around, then
it'll eliminate the alligator rule.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I've always been curious about is how much collaboration there is between clubs. Because before games, I always see you guys huddle up with the other team's medical team as well. I don't know if that's just like a formality or you have to do it. But in the course of a week to week, like, do you guys have exchange ideas with, like, maybe they've seen an injury you haven't seen? Is there any of that, or is it pretty much each team does it their own way?
Well, the beginning one that you're talking about, where we do that club meeting, that is a mandatory thing from MLS where both teams come together. Mike, the orthopedic doctor, the VMD who manages concussions, will meet with both medical staffs. Okay. We'll talk about the venue, what are the signals for emergency response, things like that. The fourth official is involved and the paramedic. So everyone knows what's the plan for an emergency. And then the fourth official and the VMD kind of just make sure everyone's on the same page for any concussion release. In terms of collaboration around teams, I think Mike's done a great job of whenever we've had these injuries that, like you said, there's nothing in the literature. Yeah. We have good relationships with pretty much all the clubs around the leagues, some NFL teams, NHL, that we'll talk to about, we've got the situation, have you dealt with it? We're not afraid to talk to other specialists if need be.
I think the other thing about that is the MLS doctors, the physician society, they are very cooperative.
Okay.
There isn't any of in England, they actually had for a while that home team doctor would take care of both teams, and then they mandated that every team have their own doctor go to even to away games, which we don't in the United States. And the reason was that was there was some shenanigans going on where the doctor would say, "Oh, he's concussed," you know, and so I got to come off.
Messi's concussed.
We don't see any of that. We have a very ethical, really good. Physician group in the MLS who treat everyone the same and work together really, really well.
Okay.
Unlike the English is what I'm taking.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mike, we got it locked down. We're collaborative.
I want to talk about my injury a little bit because you were not there in Colorado, though.
You were not. I was with you in the
hospital. You were with me in hospital. Yeah. We went together. Did you leave the game?
Yeah, so...
We left the game.
Yeah,
because when it happened... 3 minutes in,
it was really early on. And again, it was Randy and I. And Randy...
Did you know right away?
So I couldn't see it because they have the camera pivoting.
Okay.
I remember to this day, Schmetz turning around and screaming, he's broken his leg, he's broken his leg.
Okay.
So in those moments, we didn't see it, but we just came out. So yeah, I was with you.
I remember.
Randy and their trainer, Colorado trainer, splintered your leg. The paramedics came out.
Yeah.
So they got you on the ambulance, and then I joined you in the ambulance.
And we went to the Rose Medical Center
in
Denver. Yes. Oh, man, I remember now. Yeah. Okay, okay.
How in depth do you want me to get on that
story? Go. I can't remember. Okay. Yeah, go. Okay. Let's go.
So we were there. It was late at night.
Late, yeah.
And the plan was to do your surgery the next day.
Yeah.
And you were saying to me, you're like, my leg is – Rob,
it was unbelievable.
Killing
they were pumping with morphine. Yeah. It wasn't working.
So I kept going to the nurses saying, he is having a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So they had the Colorado orthopedic doctor. He came out and he looked at you and he's like, he has a compartment syndrome. Yeah. We have to do surgery right now.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So when you went into surgery,
yeah,
that's when I went back to the hotel because I'm not allowed in the room and stuff.
Yeah,
and then,
Because I woke up the next day to Randy, Adrian, and Ziggy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I did one more surgery. I did a bunch of surgeries.
Yeah.
It was there maybe one more? And then we spoke to you and you're like, no, come home. And we landed. Adrian set his plane. Mm-hmm. So Adrian's pilots carried me onto the plane. We landed at Boeing Field and went straight to Virginia Mason. And I saw you. And it was like we did a skin graft, all these kinds of stuff. Yeah. But did you get, were you watching a game or did you get a phone call?
I was at my son's game, my older son's game. And I got a text from Derek Galashad, who used to run the stretcher crew, and he goes, did you see that? And then my phone rings, it's Adrian.
Okay.
So, did you see that? How long is this going to take? What's going on? What's going to happen?
Adrian.
You know? No, Adrian,
yeah.
You know, Adrian's heart was first to the play.
What is compartment syndrome?
Yeah, because I still don't know. I say it to people and I kind of understand a little bit, the nerves and all of that, and I felt it, but I don't quite know. Yeah.
So compartment syndrome is your muscles in your lower leg are in a compartment. Mm-hmm. So the muscles are surrounded by this tight layer of tissue called the fascia, right? And what happens when you break your leg, the pressure goes up in that compartment from bleeding. And in order to get blood out of the compartment, venous pressure is 40 millimeters of mercury. So if the pressure in that compartment goes above 40, you can't get the blood out. And so then it just keeps swelling and getting bigger and bigger, and the muscle will die if you don't get on top of it right away.
Amputation and stuff like that.
Well, you could. Well, potentially if it was bad enough.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's why they took you right away, because they go in and what they do is they open the leg up and they release that tight fascia around the compartment and that, and then it really swells and you can't get the skin closed like you know, and we end up having to do
skin graft.
So it's pressure goes up in that compartment and it needs to be released or the muscle will die.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So where did the skin come from to replace?
Took it from my thigh.
From your thigh.
I'm going to give me an option, even my arse or my thigh. I said, leave my arse alone.
It's just treasure.
Take it from the thigh.
Anything but my ass.
I can't remember that. I want to ask you this because I was thinking about this. I was watching a documentary where I think it was David Beckham and a few other athletes, Andre Agassi as well. And they talk about, you know, their parents being on the sideline and how they drove them and pushed them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So when Jordan was young, and be honest, what kind of dad were you on the sideline? You played for Eastside, right? Eastside FC?
He played for Eastside.
So let's say the under 14, under 15. When you get to, he's really good, obviously.
Yeah.
Were you able to just watch his game and just say nothing? Or were you kind of involved and then driving him to and from games? Did you talk about the game? How did you parent him in those moments?
Sort of in between, I think. You know, he tried to be careful, but he tried to encourage him. And we would talk about games.
Yeah.
Not always. You know, if he didn't want to talk, we didn't talk. Sometimes he wanted to talk.
Yeah.
You know Jordan.
Yeah.
Sometimes he wants to talk. Sometimes he doesn't want to talk. Got no control over that.
One of my neighbors saw him walking through downtown Kirkland the other day and he was just hood on.
Yeah.
This was like 2 weeks ago, just kind of moping by himself and Jody called me and she's like, is he okay? And I was like, I don't know. I'll never know. I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think he's okay.
Yeah.
I think he's
okay. Even on the field, he'll do that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's his way to process. Like,
I don't know. He got that from his
Where's
mom.
Where's he get this from? Mom? Yeah. I'm sure. With the advancements in sports, we have this amazing facility.
Yeah.
I think the fans' expectation is that no one will get injured and we'll be this amazing team, right?
and managing those expectations of having this amazing facility while, you know, taking care of the players. But we still see typical hamstring injuries, you know, hamstring, and then you get a knee and then you get an ankle. Like, that's never going to stop. And I think, well, I don't know, you can touch on this, but in my opinion, it's never going to stop. It wasn't, it was the same thing 15 years ago, or maybe it wasn't. And I want to know your opinions on where injuries have come from, where they're going, where we're at right now. And is this all in the grand scheme of things, like helping not just Sounders, but throughout the whole league when you talk to other teams about injury prevention and where we were versus where we're headed, where we're at now?
So I think what we strive for, you're never going to eliminate injuries.
Yeah.
You're never going to eliminate muscle tears. The most common injury in soccer, muscle tears, most common muscle torn is the hamstring. Mm-hmm. Never going to eliminate them. The trick is to try to decrease the number of them that happen. So our focus over the years has been decreasing those number of injuries by really good preparation. And what I would say, that's the biggest difference since I became part of this team, was what the training staff and the performance staff and where sports science has gone in the last 15 years in preparing players to play with the least incidence of injury. And there may be some growth in that, but there will always be those injuries. And we have had significant decrease in the number. You know, people don't think we have.
But, right, right.
But, you know, yeah. But, you know, and there'll be periods where you get several of them and you think, oh, what are we doing wrong? But, it, you know, that's, I think, that's sort of the nature of the game. Yeah. But, though I think we've definitely have less injuries than we had when we started because of what the performance group and the rehab group is doing to get players ready at the in the preseason and continue them throughout the season, keep them strong, you know, just how they train, you know, starting here, building. Don't let somebody play a whole game until he's ready to play a whole game.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. You know, you'll see a player like JP, you know, plays for 20 minutes. Everybody's going, well, he's ready to play. Let's put him in, right? Well, he's not ready, you know, or he's going to get injured again if you don't work them.
That sort of ties into one of the last things I want to ask you guys is that, right? So you have, you know, the head knowledge, you kind of know how to apply it, but every player is different human beings. For example, I remember asking Dave 10 years ago, because Alba was like born with a six pack and he never went to the gym. Like, we'd have gym sessions and you hear his Lamborghini leaving and stuff. Like, he's not doing the gym, but yeah, he was the most jet. So how do you sort of take what you know, but then tailor it to the individual? You know, some players, like Nico's a guy who loves to do the rehab or loves to do the prehab, for example, training days off, want to run. Some guys aren't like that. Like someone like Clint, he's going to do what he wants to do. Like Clint might not want to come to the training room 2 hours before the rest of the team. So how, he doesn't. So it's like, how do you kind of say, you know what, it's not one rule fits all. Let me sort of adjust my approach to understand that's the way that guy is, for example.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we have processes and obviously plans for guys, but you do have to adapt to each person.
Yeah.
Their background is different as well. What are they used to doing?
Yeah.
So it becomes a little easier knowing someone for longer. Mm. When you get new players, you have to kind of learn a little bit about them, how they operate, what loads can they tolerate, what do you need to build? So it is, it's treating people. Overall, again, we have a philosophy that we follow, but we do have to make adjustments. Yeah. I'll be honest, Steve, if you sign tomorrow, we're not going to be having you train every single day. You will have a light first day. We'll push you on the second.
I love
you'll
it.
Probably have a couple of days off, and then you're available for 20 minutes on a weekend.
That works for me, man.
Brad would be different.
Yeah. Last question here. I would say you guys have been here since 2009.
Yeah.
The best Sounders team that you've seen,
where
you look back and you're like, wow, that team was really, really good.
I think
mine's going to be easy because I'm just going to take like a segment because it wouldn't be the whole season, but the 2022 run to the Champions League, just that beginning portion. Yeah. And if you remember as well, Raul and Nico were kind of coming back from injuries. And to Mike's point, we just talked about managing them. I remember we played Minnesota right before a key Champions League game, and they were maxed at, I think it was 45 or 60 minutes. And they were so angry that they weren't playing more against Minnesota away.
Right.
We're like, this is part of the plan. We've got the Champions League to focus on. But that team, in that moment, I've never really gone into Champions League with a really confident, a big confidence about we could do well in this tournament. We could even win it. With that team, I just thought this is going to be different this year.
Yeah, that's a great shot.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So can I say it's on air? We saw a little bit off air before you happened. You're officially retiring, right?
Kind of. Yes. The game on Saturday will be my last game.
On the side.
Yeah.
Do you think, will you miss it?
Oh, yeah.
You're going to miss it. Yeah, you will.
You know, being part of the Sounder stuff has been the best thing in my professional career. Yeah. It's most rewarding.
I bet.
Most special thing in my professional career, and I'll definitely miss it.
Yeah, yeah. I bet.
That's awesome.
Wow. Wow. And how long are you sticking around?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be sad that Mike's leaving.
I know. Like, it's going to be weird.
Mike brought me here.
Yeah.
I've loved working with Mike. Yeah. He's retiring, but he's still one of my favorites on my phone. So whenever I have an injury or I disagree with the new doctors, I'm going to call him Mike. I think I'll be around for a while still. Enjoy it.
You'll see Mike on the golf course.
Yeah. See him in the stands.
But honestly, we talked about it. Mm-hmm. For 10 years now, we've talked about your dream of getting in an RV and cruising around the country. Are you going to make this happen?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a nice summer coming up.
Yeah.
Rent one. Live the dream. Well, you worked so hard for so long.
I got two grandkids now.
It's FaceTime. They won't remember this moment in their life when you're in an RV. You can show them pictures of adventures.
Appreciate you guys coming on. Anything else, Brett?
No, that's it, man. This is awesome. Okay.